Today on Movie World as we initiate our coverage of Tribeca 2017. Time for Movie Wallace. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallace is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or on the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you.
And if you love the movies, you should be at Tribeca.
Indeed, as we are again for, this is our fourth year now?
Yep.
Covering? Yes. Including the year, I think, Yazdi, you did it on your own.
Correct.
But
year one, yes.
Yep. So this is kind of our spring holiday that we have. We take a trip from San Diego to the good old NYC for the Tribeca Film Festival, which is always a huge kind of, it's something I look forward to.
Never disappoints.
Yeah, I mean, they seem to catch movies which somehow don't make it to other film festivals, but they're still always very good, high quality films.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And look at us. We are at the end of
Day one.
And we've got 9 movies covered.
Yeah.
That's always a challenge with film festivals. There's always so much on offer. You try and get as much in as you can. You can't help but gorge yourself on this. I think we need to pace ourselves somewhat a little bit. But it's actually a great privilege to be here and have access to all this wonderful content.
And it would seem that the film festival is really catching on, the Tribeca, because this year, like more than 2 weeks ahead of the festival starting, most of the movies were sold out.
Yes. You know,
most of them.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating, yeah, because I think, you know, we're doing our best to kind of cover things. We get to see the present industry screenings oftentimes ahead of the actual main screening in the first festival, so we will be kind of telling you what is here at the festival and in hopefully in a timely manner, so that if you are in the New York area and have an interest, you can actually make one of these screenings. But yeah, don't dawdle. If there's something that you're interested in, try and get your tickets ahead of time, because tickets are extremely limited this year.
Yeah, I think they're relying on the rush lines, so don't be discouraged. Try one of the rush lines.
Yeah,
if you really want to watch a film,
yeah,
which is sold out.
But still, here we are. So I guess we should just kick things off.
Because we have nine movies to cover. 9.
How did that happen? Well, I managed to see, I think, 4 or 5.
Yes.
I think we all saw 5.
Wow.
Yeah, we all saw 5 each.
We all saw 5, and 9 reflects the ones that we all chose on our own. So let's kick off with one that, Yazdi, you covered on your own, which is called Samba. And Samba is a sports drama about redemption through the metaphor of life and boxing. So is this like a remake of like a Rocky type movie or a Creed?
I think at its heart, it is a Rocky type of movie or a Creed like movie. And it definitely has a lot of, you know, similar beats. But it's actually very, it has a very naturalistic sense of bloody through the whole movie.
What do you mean by that? Kind of like a documentary style film?
Yeah, it doesn't feel, you know, for a story as pulpy as this is, you know, it's a very pulpy plot line, and it's essentially about redemption. It's about, you know, missing fathers and resentful sons, and about people who actually use each other under the guise of being helpful, mm-hmm, and how society kind of drags you down instead of allowing you to achieve your fullest potential. So it has a lot of those themes, and considering how much plot there is and how pulpy it is, it kind of maintains a very unmelodramatic, very even, kind of almost a detached look at what's going on.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, it's tethered by excellent performances. And you know, there's 3 main characters in the movie. A man who's just come out of prison, who while he was in prison in the United States, learned how to box. Another man who lives in the Dominican Republic, and he has been a previous boxing trainer, i.e., you know, the
Mickey character.
The Mickey character. And then there's the boxer's son who has grown up while his father was in prison in the U.S. for the last 15 years, and hence is very resentful of him. Mm. But anyway, so I really like this movie. I mean, considering how tired and used up this whole boxing as a metaphor for life,
yeah,
you know, motif is, it's done remarkably well.
And is it foreign language, Yazdi, or is it in English?
It is. It's a foreign language film, and it's set in the Dominican Republic. So
I was going to say, yeah, because it comes from there, so it's actually set there as well.
Yes, it's completely set there, and it has really good music, and you get a real good sense of the people. I don't know, you kind of endear yourself to all of these characters who are all deeply flawed. And it kind of, you know, it kind of walks through cliches, but you kind of forget that there are cliches because of the way it's handled. So really a good film.
And interesting that it's called Samba. I mean, is that any reference to the dance?
I thought it would be, but yeah. Actually Samba is the Dominican Republic word for the punching bag. In a box, you know, when you're practicing for boxing, it's called the samba. And I don't know if it's called the samba because it looks like a lion and it has some association with that, but I don't know.
Okay, so
or maybe you dance around it while you're practicing, but that is called the samba.
It's more like a dancing partner kind of thing.
Very nice. So one you would recommend?
Absolutely. A beautiful film.
Okay, so let's move on then. Next one, Thumper. And that's one that Joe and I saw.
Right, while I was watching Flames.
Correct.
So Thumper is, here's the description from IMDb, is that in a town of low-income and fractured families, a group of teens are lured into working for a dangerous drug dealer, and a new girl arrives who hides a dangerous secret. This movie is directed by Jordan Ross, who also wrote it, and the chief cast members are Pablo Schreiber, Ben Feldman, and David Weber.
And let's not forget Eliza Taylor, who plays the lead female role.
Very good.
Okay, so I really enjoyed this movie. I think it was gritty, real, but there was something very endearing and sweet about it. I've never seen a story done from this viewpoint before. We've seen lots of sort of teenage drug movies. This one, I thought, brought something novel to the table. And there was some good tension in it at times. It wasn't the movie I was expecting. As it was unfolding, I was kind of thinking, what's happening here? This is kind of strange. And then something happens, or what we call the inciting incident, and then the movie really takes off. And I love that it tried to cover some quite interesting socio-economic, socio-political themes, which I thought were done very well. Really enjoyed this.
Joe, you saw this as well?
I did, yeah. I enjoyed this very much as well. I mean, I think it starts off by being, almost, documentary style look into the lives of teenagers who are, part of the, particular scene. It's a very common thing across the country right now that teenagers of, kids of a certain age are they begin experimenting with drugs, and there's kind of this subculture that exists around the use of drugs in terms of, how they're bought and distributed and then used within certain communities. So it starts off with being kind of a gritty portrayal of that. I'm not talking Trainspotting, but it was certainly, the dialogue more than anything, I think, in those early scenes just felt so appropriate. None of it felt kind of, cliche street language. And it was interesting, for me at least, to see that there weren't any racial stereotypes here. Mm. This was, a mixed group of kids. But, it was, primarily, part of the challenge of drugs going on within the white population as well. So, yeah, it's good. And then obviously the movie harbors kind of a secret. I think if you watch this movie, if you get the chance to see this one, stay away from too much of the description, because it is here in the official description. But there was a kind of a plot revelation quite early on that I wasn't expecting, which upped the ante substantially. And I thought this was, just a terrific movie, great tension. And there's, there's a break-in scene where I literally had my heart in my mouth.
Yeah.
And then some of the performances were superb. I mean, the lead played by Eliza Taylor.
Very good. This is real girl power. I'm really impressed with some of the female performances that we're getting to see from a variety of Hollywood actresses that aren't A-listers. I mean, these are young, up-and-coming, good, solid actresses. Really good performance, yeah.
Yeah, this was a very multi-dimensional role. I mean, she had to do a lot in this movie. Some of it was, it just demonstrated such wonderful range for this aspiring young actress.
Yeah, and even Pablo Schreiber, I mean, I didn't realize, I kept looking and thinking, where do I know this guy from? Of course, he was just in 13 Hours last year, and he's the mustache porn police inspector in Orange is the New Black, if you're a fan of that show.
That's right. He was absolutely menacing here.
Brilliant in this movie.
Well, he's menacing in Orange is the New Black as well.
Yeah, this is a different type of menacing.
He's kind of creepy in Orange is the New Black, whereas here he was terrifying.
Yeah.
And he was very real. And yeah, this was just a
good movie.
Very good movie. And I do hope that this is one that kind of, it has a mainstream feel to it. This is very well executed. I should probably say, you know, I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but there are film festival movies that feel like film festival movies. Yeah. And there are those which feel like they, you know, are certainly more accomplished and could justify kind of a wide release because of they would have an appeal to a mainstream audience. And I think this is one of those movies.
Very good.
So that's Thumper. Rashmi, moving on next to...
Let's move on to Abundant Anchorage. Abundant Acreage...
Available.
Okay. It's so... Look, it's late, and I wrote down the list, and I can't actually read my own writing for once.
We should say that one of the things that we do here at the Film Festival is we try and live podcast, and by that I mean... at the end of the day, after we've seen these multiple movies and then had a bite to eat and maybe a drink or two, we come back to the room and try and record the film festival. So Abundant Acreage Available is certainly a challenging title. So just very briefly, this is from Tribeca, part of the USA Narrative Competition. It's directed by Angus McLachlan. And it really tells the story, according to the description here, of a family that is still in flux, still reeling over the death of their recent father, brother, and sister Jesse Tracy, are attempting to settle into their new lives in his absence. So, Yazdi, this, I think, went head-to-head with something that Rashmi and I were elsewhere. Yeah. You were the only one that saw this.
This one actually caught my attention. When I read the description, I was thinking, this will be a good one. So I'm excited to hear what you think, Yazdi.
It's a fine film. It's a very good film. I chose to watch it over the other ones because it has Amy Ryan in it. And Amy Ryan has been doing great work for a long, long time. And she's been in many great movies. And here, finally, she gets a chance to kind of play the lead. And she just takes it and runs with it. It's really... a two-hander. It's about a brother and a sister who are pretty much, as you mentioned the description, reeling from the recent death of their father, who kind of owned this big farm. Mm-hmm. And then to their much surprise, these three older men kind of show up, and then they eventually realize that those three men were the original owners of the farm, and their father had, through deceit or otherwise, kind of taken the farm from them, and they've kind of come back to reclaim the farm, if you will. And it sounds kind of like a silly, you know, revenge kind of thing, but it's not. It's really about, you know, how do you deal with memories? How do you deal with the sins of your father? How do you deal with grief and sorrow? Mm. And, you know, the one brother kind of through a personal tragedy in his own life has kind of embraced religion as a salve. Mm. Whereas his sister is... you know, she's very angry. She was very close to the father and she's still reeling from his death. Mm-hmm. And how both of them kind of react to the presence of these three people who have suddenly come to claim the only thing that they own, which is their farm. Mm-hmm. It's played out beautifully. It is a very grim movie. I mean, it kind of has this deep, you know, underlying kind of sorrow running through it and a lot of guilt and so forth through it, which is not to say that it's not darkly funny as well. And I like the way that the movie ends, and it's not trying to kind of, you know, suddenly have a big plot twist. It just kind of follows this brother and sister through this period in their life, which is very traumatic. It's kind of reminiscent of a movie called 1,000 Acre, which came out, gosh, I want to say like 15, 20 years ago, which also was about all these, you know, all this large family, and the patriarch dies and then the family gathers at the farm and then mm-hmm. secrets are revealed. It's not as juicy or pulpy or melodramatic as that, but it's kind of along those same lines. And it has some really beautiful dialogue in it as well. So it's not a Friday night movie, but it's certainly very heartfelt and it's very genuine in its exploration of, like I said, guilt and sorrow and secrets and so forth. So again, a real fine film, I think.
It sounds very Americana-ish. Is that okay?
It is. Now, did either of you watch Certain Women?
Yes.
There was a middle piece in it with the Michelle Williams character where she kind of, reaches out to this individual who owns this piece of land, and she wants to recover some of the classic, some of the classic slate which was used in the building of the house. Only that man was not mentally quite there, and it's not very obvious who's taking advantage of whom, and right. This kind of reminded me of that as well. But yeah, it is a very, very deeply American film.
Okay.
Yeah, very.
And clearly they're going for the AAA headline with abundant acreage available.
Okay, so the next one.
Nobody got my joke there. It's too late.
No, we did, but it's...
It was too bad. It was just a terrible joke.
Yes, and we are only 3 movies into a 9-movie review.
Like Rashmi's cracking the whip here.
Yes, she is.
Because my eyelids are closing.
Next, we shall tackle...
Plus, I'm greedy and I want to work out tomorrow's schedule.
All right, what's next?
Next is Genius. So Genius is... it's going to be a TV series. So Tribeca's doing this interesting thing where they're also putting on some pilot shows of new TV shows that are coming out, hence the word pilot. Anyway, Genius is Jeffrey Rush, which I'm excited to hear about, Joe. A series which explores how patent clerk Einstein could not get a teaching job or doctorate in his early life, yet managed to go on to solve the secrets of the universe. So, Joe, how was this one?
This was great. I mean, it's directed by Ron Howard, so it has that, you know, wonderful... You know how Howard always... The movie that reminds me most of is A Beautiful Mind, where, you know, Ron Howard's exploring the personality of an individual and putting us in their shoes. I remember A Beautiful Mind had that moment where I suddenly understood what it might be like to have schizophrenia, have mental illness. And this movie starts to do that. It runs about an hour long. Right. It's the first episode of what will be a TV series, as Rashmi mentioned. And, you know, I, for one, I'm going to go back home and set the DVR for this because it has such punchy energy to it. You know, again, Ron Howard has that beautiful visual style where he starts to explore in this first episode, you know, the origins of the Albert Einstein character that we know. It's based very much on Walter Isaacson's biography of Einstein. And, you know, there's just these kind of lovely visual moments where you can start to see how Einstein as a man may have begun to think about things like the theory of relativity. And it's done, you know, with beautiful kind of computer graphics. It's not chintzy. I know it sounds horrible. I'm really talking about one or two scenes in the whole hour of the thing. So it's not like, you know, this kind of space cadet, you know, visual crazy fest. But it's just, you know, those particular moments illustrated like that are terrific. The other piece that this particular episode introduced me to as well was Einstein's early life. So it kind of jumps back and forth between the very young kind of maverick Albert Einstein, the one who had difficulty fitting into class because he was really, he outpaced his professors, and he was very much a rebel against, being taught specific things in a specific way. He was interested in what he was interested in and disinterested in everything else, which caused problems getting into college. But it flits back and forth between that kind of, young man, kind of adolescent Einstein, and the much older Einstein just prior to his leaving Germany. And so explores, you know, some of the changes that were going on in Germany with respect to, you know, the uprise of the Nazi Party. And so it also kind of gives you a little glimpse of what it might have been like to be an educated Jew back in the time of the uprising of the Nazi Party.
And did they say anything about how long the series is going to be? Is it like a six run?
No, there wasn't much information available. They kind of just started the preview and you know went into that, and then it just ended when it ended. But you know. It's really, you know, this is a character study, right? So it's a portrayal of a man, and I think already I have kind of an appreciation. One of the first things I did today when I had a moment was actually download the Audible book of the Walter Isaacson book, because, you know, already I can tell that this is a terrific portrayal. This is going to be a terrific portrayal. Jeffrey Rush really does become Einstein, and you know, we've seen the kind of the big professorial hair and the moustache that is
and
character.
He's such a great actor. But Jeffrey Rush
inhabits that role.
So good.
And, you know, some of the character flaws that were known of him. I mean, you know, we know that he was perhaps not, like many of these great people, he perhaps was not the best husband in the world. And, you know, this movie kind of, you know, gets into some of that too. So, you know, do set your DVR for this. It's produced by National Geographic. Ron Howard at the helm as director. Wonderful cast. And it just moves with great energy in the way that Ron Howard always does. So, great stuff.
Okay, next on the list is Holy Air.
So, Holy Air is directed by Shadi Sroor, and it's a feature narrative, and the description is as follows, that desperate to care for his pregnant wife and ailing father, Adam embarks on his latest, riskiest business venture, selling bottled Holy Air. A sharp comedy set in modern-day Nazareth, Holy Air examines the complicated emotions that go into living as a modern, progressive Christian family on the world's most spiritual ground. So I know both of you saw it. I did not.
We did, yeah.
I love this movie. What a great little film with vivid characters and a really, really, really likable central character. And that's why I think the movie works so well. The main protagonist is just this adorable, likable fellow who manages to just mostly get it wrong, but you can't help but want to give him a hug instead of slap him. And it's a progressive movie. It's set in modern time Nazareth, and it again gives
within
us a
the
window
Arab community.
In the Arab community, but they're Christian family.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it doesn't make fun of religion. I think it very cleverly exposes the hypocrisy of religion, which I really enjoyed.
And I forgot to mention the lead character is played by the writer and director
Correct.
Of the movie. Yeah, so
Correct.
It's quite an
accomplishment. Really, really good film. I really like this movie.
I mean, to your point about the hypocrisy of religion, I mean, I don't know that it does that in as much as it takes us to how religion can be exploited. And so, you know, the concept of the movie, I mean, it's in the log line right there. Holy Air, this idea that you might be able to put a financial price on air that is considered to be holy, you know, kind of pokes fun at many things that occur around religion, particularly in a land like Israel, where, you know, people who are on their lifetime pilgrimage would do anything for example, you know, there's this, you know, it's well known that holy water or rocks from the Holy Land and from places where, you know, Jesus may have stood or, you know, any one of the major religions, you know, this movie kind of pokes fun at that. But it does it in a way that, you know, you can understand how and why this might come to be, right? Tourists are often ripe for exploitation and people have to survive. And I think this character being who he is, like, yes, Rashmi, you described him brilliantly because he is. He somehow screws up everything in his life, but he still remains extraordinarily likable. The movie also has this wonderful, wonderful sense of humor in there. It has these little moments that just explode into something unexpected. And,
yes.
And one of the things that... you know, I kind of came away feeling was the movie wasn't really about anything at all. I mean, it was almost like just a peek into the life of this particular individual for a short period of time.
And all the people he interacts with, and all of those people are interesting.
Yeah, we didn't get any of the kind of hero's journey type stuff.
No.
Like, there was no lesson learned about life or anything. It just, it kind of popped us into his life for a period of time, you know, gave us a sense of... you know, ridiculousness about some of the moments around him. And, you know, it kind of felt like an Arab Christian Israeli version of Seinfeld for a while.
Yeah, I think that's a good description. That's quite
really
a good
bizarre.
Description, actually, Joe. But I think it also highlights how people in that area live or don't live together without being too hyper-political about it.
Correct.
Not that it's shying away from any of the politics, but it felt very authentic.
And I have to shout out the character played by his wife, or the woman who played his wife.
Who's a dead ringer for Amal Clooney to me.
Yes, that's perhaps who she was reminding
Maybe
me of.
It was
but,
Amal Clooney.
She had wonderful comedic timing on everything. And, you know, again, as far as actors go, she had a lot to do in this movie in very small snippets of dialogue. She had a line here and a line there, but they all seemed to... augment that particular scene for what, whichever which way, either she was trying to get his attention in some way, where she had, you know, enormous physical comedy, or she had, you know, a very kind of touching moment of feeling very low at one point. And again, we felt her pain. So she was a very interesting character.
And it's quite a saucy movie.
She was a very feminist movie. So, you know, let's talk about it. You know, within that particular community, you don't necessarily expect to see, you know, sex toys bandied around. But, you know, you do get that in this movie. And the reaction of the people around her really, you know, was very much, I think, the reaction I had as an audience member. I was like, whoa, you know, that I wasn't expecting that. But very, very funny. Yeah,
great movie. Please go see this one. And like Joe said at the beginning of the podcast, I was looking at the schedule. All the films we are talking about are still going to play. There will be an opportunity if you can get tickets to see all of the movies we're talking about.
Terrific. That's Holy Air.
Okay, next on the list is King of Peking.
So I think this is one of the ones that you asked me to introduce, Rashmi. So bear with me as I flip through the book to get to the page. So this is a narrative movie. Interestingly, comes from China, USA, and Australia. It's filmed in Mandarin with subtitles and directed by Sam Yutus. And the description here in our film guide from the Tribeca website is that Big Wong and Little Wong are a close-knit father-son duo. Together, they travel around as a mobile cinema projecting Hollywood movies for local villagers. It goes on, but I guess I'll stop there. And Rashmi, you were the only one that saw this?
I did. And look, I feel crazy saying this, but 3 for 3, what another great movie. Really? I mean, I don't know if it's just that I'm so excited to be at Tribeca and this is day one, but honestly, this was the first movie I watched and I was not disappointed. And I didn't realize, Joe, that it had some Australian backing to it, but I actually wrote down, this is like one of those Muriel's Wedding, the dressmaker type feel. It totally had that feel. This is a brilliant narrative on a father who's trying to raise his son and he's trying to do the right thing, but rather like the character in Holy Air, he tends to just screw things up. The lovely thing about this movie is that, the main protagonist is very likable, and this had some really good humor in it whilst transporting you to a modern day China, although a rural China a lot of the time. And just a guy who's trying to do the right thing by his son and just manages not to. But this is a beautiful narrative about two men who love movie. And so there's a lot of movie references and they call each other by, you know, they play this movie game through the movie where they each guess what movie the other one's thinking about. It's just a very endearing movie that just warmed my heart. It was, I think the main theme of today that I've figured out so far, all the movies I managed to watch were very authentic. There was a real authenticity about most of the movies I watched, I thought.
And the movies they reference, are they Chinese movies?
Or no, they're all Hollywood. Movies? All Hollywood movies. All Hollywood movies. And this almost has a bit of that Quentin Tarantino-esque where he breaks things into chapters. So it's broken into 5 chapters, each which has a distinct theme about it. Very, very funny. Funny, endearing, sweet, and smart.
You know, it's interesting you say that they have a very real feel to them. I mean, I think, you know, oftentimes these smaller films can capture life in a way that, you know, we're so used to the artifice that can be Hollywood, right? You know, the standard set of beats that you have within a typical plot. You know, there's many books being written on how to break a story out into, you know, the standard kind of Hollywood moments where we have the lows and the highs and they follow an arc. And what I like about film festival movies is that they often don't do that. You know, Holy Air was a good example of that. Sounds like King of Peking.
Correct.
Also is is a little less conventional, which makes them refreshing. And again, I think they can, it feels like they maybe capture life a little better than they might otherwise do if they didn't follow the standard Hollywood model.
Yeah, how great that we can see what happens in other parts of the world.
I mean, that's such a window. Such a window, right?
Yeah. Particularly at film festivals.
Yeah.
You know, you just get to see movies set in Nazareth and movies set in the Dominican Republic, a movie set in China, and it's just you get to live somebody else's life.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I would say this one is a rush out and see. Really, really nice movie.
Terrific. Okay, what's next?
Next on the list is Flames.
Oh, the other one that I'm supposed to be introducing right back to back. So let me flip to page 87 in my Tribeca Film Festival guide. So this is a USA movie, but again, part of the USA narrative competition, I believe, here at the film festival. Mm-hmm. Has two directors, Zephyr Throwell and Josephine Decker, both of whom were also the screenwriters. And again, I'll read the first couple of lines of the description here in the Tribeca book, which is: filmed over 5 years, Flames follows real-life couple Josephine Decker and Zephyr Throwell from the white-hot passion of first love to the heartbreak of the bitter end. So Flames is one, Yazdi, you saw this one?
Yeah.
I was actually very interested to see this, and it went up against something else. So I'm getting the sense, just from this description, that it's a very highly charged movie. Tell us about it.
It is, and I think it's the most remarkable thing about this movie is its structure. I don't quite know of a movie in recent memory, at least, that has done this, which is that it's a narrative feature, but it really... The two individuals who are credited as directors are really the main, the man and the woman who occupy 100% of the movie. And I think they made a decision early on that they would film their relationship in 100% honesty over a period of 5 to 6 years. Yeah, it's
interesting that they took that long to do this.
And so... it's weird that they hired, obviously, photographers and other people to kind of document their relationship. But the movie actually starts in 2001. So this is a movie which has been long in the making. So it's almost a documentary from that perspective.
Yeah.
So it starts in 2001 with these two characters, and it kind of follows them at different parts.
So
during the course of the relationship, it's kind of like 500 Days of Summer. Well,
can I interrupt you? I mean, is it narrative or is it reality or documentary? Like, what's
it's what's very the deal here? Hard to tell. I mean, it's not listed as a documentary; it's listed as a narrative. So maybe it's
documentary?
I don't know. I mean, I think
that suggests comedy, right?
Yeah.
So
because it's very, very meta, and this is what I mean by it's got a wondrous structure, because you watch these two characters interact. Going through the, like it describes there, the red hot passion of first love through subsequent years. And then you think this whole movie is going to be about the relationship. And about halfway through the movie, you actually watch them watching scenes from their own movie. So they're sitting down with some other person who looks like the director, and they're like, I hope you don't show this in the movie. And this is too much to watch. Wow. So it's almost like meta about... I don't know if these are actors who are pretending these actors, or if they're really... too real and it's too raw that I think it's actually factual that these two people were indeed going through this relationship.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because as I read the description here, it says exactly what you said. The filmmakers, when the relationship doesn't quite go according to plan, the now former couple are left to decide what to do with their film in progress. And the two filmmakers... and at the end of the relationship, realize that's not the end of the story. They continue filming, reconstructing what happened and where it went all wrong.
Oh, that's what really interested me about it.
So. Yeah, and I think clearly, after a particular point, their relationship was so intense and so charged from the beginning that you knew it had to burn out. So it burned out pretty quickly. But the decision had been made to follow them for the next 4 to 5 years. So I think the only, not criticism, but the only thing which kind of didn't quite work, I think, was the fact that after a while you keep meeting these people who are just miserable. They really hate each other at that point. And then it becomes a little tiresome and it becomes too indulgent to just watch them saying, no, it's because you did this. No, it's because you did that. And I think the other thing also is, either intentionally or unintentionally, the movie is so much more interested in the female character than the male character. And you really...
Females are more interesting generally, I think, in a broken relationship.
Maybe, or maybe it's just a question of the actor. The female actor is so open, and she's like a mirror, and you can really understand what she's going through and her expectations and so forth. But I think the male lead is, again, maybe necessarily so, very closed off. So mm-hmm. you never really understand things from his point of view. So, you know, it kind of feels a little bit uneven from that perspective. But it really is quite remarkable in terms of this too is what movies can be, because it's kind of on the edge of documentary and narrative.
It sounds like it's a pretty unique piece of art here that they've constructed, created. It was edited by the male, so Zephyr Throwell. Correct. I can imagine he would probably have a lot more creative control there for during the process to show what he wanted of the female character. But
because they are being filmed naturally as they're on flights and as they're coming off of planes and as they're visiting places, and they go, you know, on a whim, they decide to throw a dart on the world map, and wherever it lands, they're going to go visit there, and it lands up on this island in the middle of the Indian Ocean, and they actually go all the way there. And it's kind of following them along.
We tried that game, didn't work.
Well, funny how it kept landing in Italy, but anyway, that's a different discussion.
But so my point is, it doesn't.
It's like movie world. It could be the audio podcast version of this movie.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
But it doesn't seem like it's scripted. It did seem like it was documentary. Either that or exceptionally good actors.
So would you recommend this for most people?
I'll be honest with you.
You look a bit grimacing. Like, I'm not getting a sense that you loved this.
I think it's exceptional in its structure. Like I said, for me, it got a little bit too indulgent, a little bit repetitive towards the end. But it's amazing how it kind of plays with what is real and what's not in terms of how you perceive these two characters. And the lead female is brilliant.
Okay, so, good.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's almost a good segue into the next one, which is Keep the Change. And this is the log line for the Keep the Change. And then I actually managed to get the press notes. So I'm going to read you something which I found fascinating. So this is a New York City romantic comedy. Keep the Change is the unlikely love story of two people who meet in a support group. Now, this film apparently was 4 years in the making. It's actually about an autistic couple. And actually, the filmmaker spent 4 years with this group of people constructing almost a factional version of themselves. Mm-hmm. So the people that we watch are truly have the learning disabilities and autism that they portray in the movie, but they're almost like fictionalized versions of themselves. Mm-hmm. And this also stars Jessica Walters. She's the big name in this one as well, of Arrested Development fame, which I love. So what did you think, guys? This is actually one that we all got to watch. So, Joe, why don't you go first?
Sure. I mean, this is a very, you know, at the beginning of the movie, I actually forgot the fact that it was, you know, set within, you know, with an autistic theme. Along. So at first I thought we had this character who was you know, very awkward, very irritating, and then obviously within a couple of minutes it dawned on me that this is somebody who has you know, the disorder that we refer to as autism, although we know that and as beautifully portrayed in this, it's a spectrum of different types of things that people you know, are challenged with. But overall, this movie was strangely charming. I found myself, you know, really enjoying spending time with all of the characters. And once you got to know them, some of the things that they said and the way that they said them, I love the fact that they may be fictionalized versions of themselves, because you know, they all have such endearing traits, and yet you could see how in the cold light of day in the quote-unquote non-autistic world they might be seen as, you know, either offensive or difficult to kind of relate to. But being inside this world with them for an hour and a half, as we were, was wonderful. The movie was genuinely funny. I mean, it had some terrific laugh out loud moments. I mean, belly laugh moments, and not just because of the awkwardness of the you know, their interactions with other people, but some really good jokes. Yeah. Guys, what did you think?
Yes, what did you think?
Yeah, I think it's very risky to make a movie where all of the characters have a particular disability, because you could come off pandering, or you could come off making very pat assumptions or pat conclusions about anything.
Or about like making fun of them.
Or making, yeah. Or cheap jokes, kind of, you know, looking down on them. So it's a very difficult place to kind of venture out to, but the movie takes that risks, and I think those risks pay off. It's a little uneven. I found it a little bit choppy, but I think it's because of the fact that these are not professional actors and they are kind of play acting. But I think it works beautifully, because I don't think I've ever seen a movie where the lead characters are real autistic individuals. Mm-hmm. And I think it plays beautifully, because not only are we looking at a couple, both of whom who are on the autistic spectrum, but there is a clear difference between the male and the female. It's pretty evident that the female character is perhaps a little bit more autistic than the male one, or that was my assumption. Mm-hmm. Also, there's a very clear class difference in that, you know, the male character comes from a very wealthy, very affluent family. He's much better off, whereas the other character is not as much. And it kind of really plays these differences in class, differences in... Mm-hmm. in your mental capacity and how the world treats you, and how you in a way mirror back how the world judges you. There's a beautiful scene set at an event which happens where the lead guy's parents invite a whole bunch of people, and that's really
right, the kind of house in the Hamptons
at the house moment. In the Hamptons, yeah. Kind of party, and that's very beautifully realized. So I think just again to allow us you know, briefly a vision into people that we don't normally know, people who are autistic and who interact with each other in this group, I think it's a marvel. And for I forgive all its choppiness, because like you said, it really is funny. And I won't lie, it has, you know, it brought a tear to my eye at the end. I was very moved, and it has just the most perfect ending. So what a nice film.
Rashmi, what do you think?
I absolutely agree with you both. So I don't want to rehash what you've both said, but I agree 100% with everything both of you have said. I think this is a gem of a movie, and I think everyone should watch this. This really is a window into a parallel universe that exists right under our noses. And I think we very easily ignore what's happening with those people because we feel uncomfortable as quote unquote normal people in this universe. To maybe stare at these people who are autistic, who have learning disabilities or are socially awkward. And I think that it does a great job of holding a mirror up to ourselves in a way, because regardless of who you are, we all face these problems in love and relationships and class and gender and intelligence. And so I think what I took away from the movie was, at the end of the day, it's really just about two people finding out who they are and what's important to them. And that last scene, Yazdi, I agree with you. It just elevated the movie to something that was pretty special.
Mm-hmm.
A wonderful movie. I mean, this is why I love film festivals. I hope this gets a main release.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention is that it always amazes me is that people are so scared about dealing with individuals who are quote unquote different, and even more so about the sexuality of people who are quote unquote different. And like the movie The Sessions or the movie Margarita with a Straw, this movie is very matter of fact about sexuality, you know, that just because somebody is different than you and me, their needs are no different. And it's so refreshing to see it deal with, you know, desires and needs, and you know, it's
and it goes there. Very mature. It went there.
It doesn't shy away from it.
So no, not at all. In fact, it does a wonderful job of that, and then also illustrates that, you know, there are people with this disorder that they don't understand some of our normal social norms and conventions, and you know that's probably why we struggle in understanding some of these issues with you know people who have autism. But you know, absolutely, Esther, you said it brilliantly.
Yep.
Okay.
Final movie and the final one we saw today. Did you see how I did that?
Yes.
The crescendo of our evening was Flower.
Flower. So Flower is directed by Max Winkler, and the description is as follows. A rebellious and quick-witted 17-year-old firecracker, Erica Vandross, played by Zoe Deutsch, kills time with her friends, gawking at older men in bowling alleys, and sexually scheming guys out of their money. However, her biggest scheme is still to come when her mother asks her boyfriend and his troubled, fresh out of rehab son to move in with them in this biting dark comedy. We kind of ended our day, all three of us, watching this film. What did you guys think?
So I think this is a good story. I think it's an unusual coming of age movie. I think it hinted a little bit for me at Diary of a Teenage Girl. I enjoyed this in the moment, but I found it tonally inconsistent. The main protagonist for me read too much like Miley Cyrus. So I had a difficult time with her, although I did like the acting. I think this had great dialogue, and I think the three girls who acted in it, the three friends, they had great chemistry. And I think later when we saw the director during the Q&A, mm-hmm. I do like the fact that he allowed them to improvise. And I think that was probably what came across those parts as authentic. For the whole, I enjoyed the movie. I just think it had a few problems in terms of tonality.
Yeah, I mean, the pluses of this movie are that the main character played by Zoe Deutsch is not just beautifully acted, it's beautifully drawn. It's just this character doesn't exist in the mm-hmm. real world. And if you were to ask for an opinion, she's a very fictionalized character. And I think she at times the movie kind of crosses over into territory that, you know, creates plausibility questions. But put all of that aside, I mean, you know, this is a hell of a ride of a movie from start to finish. I mean, I was absolutely engaged with both the performance of the main lead. You know, it took us to places and moments that I won't be forgetting anytime soon. And I think, you know, much to the credit of Max Winkler, who directed the movie, he was there for a Q&A at the end. He really kept the pace going. And I think, you know, again, those director Q&As are very insightful, but, you know, he made the point that we had a female character that was written by male characters, but in order to kind of keep that dialogue real, he allowed the actors some room to improvise, and it all felt very well put together, very yeah. real, very frightening at times. And like I say, you know, the apart from the kind of the almost comic book superhero elements of what was the main character, this movie was terrific.
Yes, Dee. I'm interested to hear what you'll say, because I know you love this genre.
Yeah, I do love coming-of-age films. It's my favorite genre. I think we saw some incredible movies today, you know, from all parts of the world, touching on all kinds of different topics. And for me, this was easily the best of all of them. I really, really like this film, mostly because, you know, just like Keep the Change, Flower goes through very, very dangerous territory. Again, we're talking about the sexuality of somebody who is a teenager and who uses her sexuality almost without remorse. But it's not just about that. It's about, you know, everybody playing with each other. And you know, I was, you know, this movie has Adam Scott in it, who we all like and love. It's got Catherine Hahn, who is
yes.
brilliant. I mean, yes. I don't think I've ever seen Catherine Hahn. You know, she plays all kinds of kooky characters, but she's like on an altogether different level here.
Yeah.
But the lead actress, Zoe Deutsch, is, I mean, I think this is like a star-making performance. I mean, it she's is. So good here. And just because the movie kind of goes to all these very dangerous places. It goes to incest. There's all kinds of weird things that go, you know, things which are implied. Incest is implied at multiple levels. There is like, you know, some weird relationships here. The director during the Q&A mentioned that this screenplay had been going around for a long time and nobody wanted to touch it because it was, yeah. you know, so...
And I can see why.
Yeah, it's so inflammatory. But I think the movie kind of brings it all together beautifully. I really liked that it was completely unpredictable. I did not know where it was headed, and I at times I did not know whose story it was.
Yeah, because it starts off
being her story, but then eventually becomes someone else's story, I think. And part of it, I think, is the movie wants to be a little bit sleazy. So I think, you know, part of it is like Wild Things. Do you remember Wild Things, that movie with
yes
long time ago? Part of it is like like a raunchy version of Clueless. Part of it reminded me of Hard Candy, that movie with Ellen Page and Patrick Wilson, where this girl lures a sexual predator and then kind of ties him up and seeks revenge on him. So it's kind of playing with this whole, you know, who is the sexual predator? Who is taking advantage of whom? And it's funny, and it's very tightly structured. I really had a blast with it.
Yeah, I guess, and I agree with you, Yazdi, and I think it's smart. But I guess for me, I wish it had just been a bit more restrained, because I think it kind of, at the beginning, went to the edge and managed to stay restrained. And then at some point in the movie, it does that 180 degree turn. It's usually, it's at the bit when it gets serious. And I think the director describes it as, you know, when you leave the folly of youth behind, right?
Right.
But I think in going over, in not being restrained, it got a little bit precious for me.
Yeah, I think I could have done if the movie had not changed course in its last half an hour. It does change course very dramatically.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I mean, I found myself rooting for the characters in spite of it all. And
true. Yeah.
So when we had that change, it didn't affect for me the way that I felt about the narrative, right? It still wanted, I was rooting for them all the way to the end. And it's one of those kind of moments in a movie where all hell breaks loose, right? Everything changes and there is no path back for these characters from the situation. That's very difficult to set up.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we often see it threatened in a movie, but we never kind of get there. And then here it kind of takes us down that road, and it's a very frightening place to be. I was genuinely for the 10 minutes following that thinking
this
cannot end well. There's no resolution here. That's what I really enjoyed about the way this story was told.
Yeah.
And again, I like you, I'm not going to forget this movie for a while. I mean, especially that lead performance is just incredible.
Look, really, really good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to see her on the Oscar shortlist within a couple of years. I mean, if it's kind of what Room did for Brie Larson, right? It kind of she's been in a number of things. I looked up her IMDb just while we were at dinner, and some, she was actually in Everybody Wants Some.
Oh, really?
From last year as one of the female characters, yeah, and a couple of other things. But she's a real powerhouse of an actress, and she knows how to carry.
And it's hard to play a 17-year-old.
No, for sure. But it's also hard to play. I think this kind of Miley Cyrus is a good one because, you know, she has absolutely no self-doubt as a character.
But I think it's also her, there's a lot of non-verbal acting in here and her reactions, which is just note perfect.
Yes. Yes.
On some instances where she just transcends the script by the way she reacts to things happening around
and
her.
And I found myself thinking, like, there is no way, if you think about the young Hollywood actresses today, like an Emma Stone, a Jennifer Lawrence, and, you know, even an Emma Roberts would not be able to do this.
Yeah, no. I mean, Belle Powley's Diary of a Teenage Girl character came
similar,
close.
Yes.
But nothing like the kind of inner
and
confidence
again,
and
powerful
sheer power
lead.
Of this lead. Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Okay. End of day one.
Indeed, yes. So it's after midnight here. Gosh, 12:25. So let's wrap things up for the evening and get some sleep ahead of day two for us tomorrow.
And what we'll are you excited about for tomorrow?
You know, I haven't even got that far.
Oh, you
actually. I'm literally looking at the schedule as we go along tomorrow. So how about you? Anything you're
obsessed. I'm obsessed with trying to get to watch My Friend Dahmer, which is about the Jeffrey Dahmer.
D-A-H-M-E-R.
Correct.
Dahmer.
Correct. So that's one I'm really excited about. And that's the first thing in the morning for me.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to a movie called Aardvark, which has got Chris Evans, Jenny Slate, a whole bunch of...
John Hamm,
a whole bunch of actors. And there's another one called Sweet Virginia, which looks really good. Thirst Street is another one.
Shadow Man is another one for me, yes. Which is the precursor to Banksy, apparently. He could have been Banksy, or he was Banksy before Banksy, who I love. So listeners of the show will know that. And The Endless is another one I'm looking forward to, and then a few in the evening.
Yeah.
Terrific. So, yeah, everyone, I encourage you to go over to TribecaFilm.com. The hashtag for this year is Tribeca2017. So, you know, if you tweet or Instagram, then, you know, certainly look that up. You can find out more about the film festival. It's what's going on. And if you're in the New York area, get your butt down here. Go see some of these movies. It's a terrific time for everyone. So let's wrap up for the evening. Until our next podcast from Tribeca, we'll probably do two or three podcasts over during our time here. Until then, it's too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
Really good night from me.
And me as well.